miles of black ribbon on the lone highway. Men turned into boys on the lone highway. Rest stop creeps by on the lone highway. Pretty girls beware out on the lone highway. The lone highway. Lost a little honey on the lone highway. Left me for another on the lone highway. They killed Dirty Dog McGee on the lone highway. Stroked a little girl's hair on the lone highway. On the lone highway. On the lone highway.
Hello and welcome to Operation Scorpio. Today's date is May 7th. 2022, and welcome to the free-range open-air insane asylum we call Earth. Well, guys, here we are. Here we are watching the manipulation of human thought and human beliefs be fold before our very eyes. And make no mistake, mind control and social engineering has become a science, and it has been a science for over 100 years, probably a lot longer than that. But the methods have been fine-tuned. And this became sort of, you know, a science. Really, with Eddie Bernays and his band of magic elves began using the mass media as a means to manipulate the behavior of the great unwashed masses, you know, first just to sort of manipulate our spending and our buying habits, but then it very quickly evolved way past that. And I'd be willing to bet this has been a science for more than 100 years. It's a science for 100 years that we can document, let's say that. But I think the engineering of human behavior has been going on since recorded history. And of course, recorded history is a lot longer than we are told. And guys, as long as we are reacting to whatever the enemy war transmissions known as the mainstream media shovels out in our direction, we really are just like hamsters on a wheel in a cage, spinning round and round and thinking we're going somewhere. It's time to stop reacting to all the bait they put out for us. You know, it's like a wind-up doll. You just turn the handle on the back, set it down on the table, and watch it spin around and move around to the tune they are calling out. And of course, the latest tune being called out is the emotional issue of abortion, the most emotional and divisive issue imaginable, at least in modern times. It's the perfect issue for the great unwashed masses to fight over and to keep everyone in each other's throats, you know, clamoring to the government for their rights. And remember, as long as you're asking the government for your rights, you have none. That's the irony of it all, guys. And of course, really, if you think about it sort of in an unemotional way, there's no way to ever resolve the issue of abortion, no matter what side of it you're on. Because like it or not, abortion cannot be completely stopped by using the power of the government anyway. There's other means that it could be done, but not through the force and implied violence of the government. Because remember, any time the government steps in, the only thing that backs up their words is the threat of implied violence. That's it, guys. So you're not going to stop this any more than drugs can be stopped. I mean, I think we all might personally think that using drugs is a bad thing. But nevertheless, people make their own choices in life. And many people choose to use drugs. And of course, we all know what an unmitigated disaster the so-called war on drugs has been. And really all it's been about is pushing out the competition, because the biggest drug dealer in the world are the intelligence agencies. They don't want you to know that one, but it's pretty obvious if you look into it, even in a cursory way. So really what it comes down to is anytime you're trying to use the force of the federal government to dictate how people live, you really are barking up the wrong tree. And, you know, we really do have a dysfunctional, abusive relationship with government. It's dysfunctional, guys. It really is. And part of, I think, our responsibility is people that have some kind of knowing and knowledge base of what's going on, is we have to start, you know, at first visualizing and imagining what kind of world we want to have. Because sitting back and demanding your constitutional rights from the government ain't going to cut it. But I think really, you know, local communities of people, you know, coming together in various ways, finding new ways to interact and grouping people together who have different skill sets to trade, to barter, to create voluntary contracts with. Because every contract has to be voluntary, guys. It has to be. And if you think about it, anytime you use the threat of government force, which is essentially the threat of violence to force people to live together or to interact with each other who have nothing in common and possibly do not like each other, this is always going to end in disaster. And ultimately, this is the starting point for tyranny. We all have to have the choice and the ability to decide who we interact with and how we interact. I think this is the starting point for a new reality. And I don't think they want us to understand what the game really is. I was kind of touching on this last week. They don't want us to know what the game is or what the game board is, because anyone who tries to explain that is a conspiracy theorist. And it's really just sort of a conspiratorial view of history. It's a different understanding of how power actually works, not the fairy tale comic book version they feed the public. And, you know, I was talking with Daryl Wayne, friend of show and personal friend. We were sort of discussing some of these things. And, you know, he made a great observation that I want to share, which is that the reason it's so easy to get hamburger meat in the store is because cows don't know what the game is. And that really is true. Let that sink in. That's why it's easy to get hamburger meat in the store, because cows don't know what the game is. That's a deep thought and very true. So, you know, if we play out just a few steps of, you know, oh, it's horrible. You know, the Supreme Court might strike down our constitutional right for an abortion. Well, this is all meaningless, first of all, number one. And really, if you play it out, all that's basically going to happen is it's all going to be kicked back to the states, which ultimately is a good thing. The more issues that come back to the states, the better. And of course, this is the real reason why the Civil War was fought, guys, not because of slavery. And really, you know, a few states, a handful of states might actually ban abortion. And a handful of states will probably restrict abortions. And then other states are going to have what essentially amounts to abortion tourism. You know, I'm sure California will be one of those states. Come to California and get an all-expense-paid trip. Luxury hotel and, whatever else. All the amenities with your abortion. You know, a package deal. This is, you know, how it's going to play out. And ultimately, people have to make their own choices in life, guys. That's what it's all about. And guess what? Some people are going to do things you don't personally like. Deal with it. That's the reality of having a free will society. And make no mistake, abortion is a big business, guys. You know, not only in the physical procedure, you know, but the use of stem cells and other, let's say, bodily products is a huge industry. And it's quite gruesome, but this goes into a whole nother realm that I'm not going to touch upon today, but you can use your imagination. So yeah, the more things are kicked back to the states, I think the better for everybody. Because then you have, you know, the states kind of acting as, you know, sort of a laboratory to provide the best stage upon which people can act out their lives. And the good thing is, if you have 50 states, if you don't like the way a state is being run or the way they want to create their civilization, you move. And that's the problem with having an overarching federal government or even a world government. There's nowhere to go. If you don't like it, your options are pretty limited. And here's the ultimate thing, guys. There is no need for a federal government at all. We don't need it. The states already have more power than they could possibly need to, you know, create the basic rules of a civilization, way more. But of course, not many people are going to talk about that, that the federal government is unnecessary. And it's also redundant. And if you think about it, guys, it's the federal government that has cooked almost every major problem up that's facing this country and the world today. And really for the last 100 years or more, but certainly since America's involvement in World War I and the Federal Reserve. Without the Federal Reserve, we never would have had World War I, guys. Never would have happened. So really, the big picture here, guys, is that the centralization of power, that is the biggest enemy of freedom, no matter what, you know, part of the political spectrum you might find yourself on, the centralization of power is the biggest enemy of freedom. And here's the most important thing, guys. While everybody is arguing about abortion, and again, this is an issue for which there is no government solution. There just isn't. While everybody's arguing about abortion and working themselves into an emotional frenzy, that's the important part. While everyone's arguing about that, the international elves who have their hands on the levers of power are slowly but surely shutting down the economy. One little switch at a time. They're turning the switches to off slowly but surely, so it doesn't become too obvious that they're doing it on purpose. That's really the game here too, right? To make it look like, oh, this is just a big accident. We had no idea that this is going to completely screw the economy up. My God. No, that's part of the game we're playing here. And that's really the role of government, is to sell this notion that, well, this isn't on purpose, guys. We're looking out for your best interest here. None of this is on purpose, you know. We had nothing to do with the attacks on 9/11. It was these guys with funny towels on their head and lived in caves in Afghanistan. That's who did it, not us, guys. We're looking out for you. And feathering our own nests, too. Yeah, it's all a big con job, guys. We really need to reevaluate our relationship with government and see that we really are in an abusive relationship, guys. We are. So what's happening now is that, you know, one method by which they are shutting down the economy is these, you know, the international elves who have their hands on the control of the Federal Reserve. You know, the spigot of magic shekels is slowly being turned off. I mean, they're aggressively raising interest rates, guys. I mean, a half a point just the other day on top of several other rate increases just within a few months. This is very aggressive. And let's not forget that this, you know, this is a private international corporation that masquerades as a government entity, the Federal Reserve. And it's an entity that has essentially dictatorial power over our money supply and the value of money. Completely outside the realm or control of our so-called government. These people just do what they want. And if you really look at it pragmatically, this supply of, you know, magic shekels is what has kept the economy alive for the last 10 years, actually longer than that, but in earnest for the last 10 years, 12 years, really, since the 2008 crash. That's when they started the quantitative easing, which is just, you know, printing up magic shekels by the trillions. That's what's kept the stock market going. That's what's kept these big corporations afloat. And of course, the biggest, most powerful corporations will be protected no matter what happens to the economy, because they are in a separate realm, a secret economy. And there's a huge secret economy, guys. You know, like with your birth certificate being sold and traded and used as credit in really what amounts to a secret economy that is totally unknown to most people. That's huge, guys. And that's a very deep rabbit hole. And we're going to go into this this secret economy and the secret trading of your birth certificate and you as a commodity, along with your status in this country as a citizen. We're going to go over these things with Roger Sales, a man that's taken a deep dive into this stuff for many, many years, coming up next hour. And in the third hour, we will be taking calls with our guests. So start thinking of questions and feel free to join in. So, you know, we're supposed to think that, well, the Federal Reserve is raising interest rates to slow inflation, you see. That's the goal here, is to sort of slow down inflation, said the expert who really doesn't know anything. And it's a truly naive assumption. You know, if you look at the world from a completely non-conspiratorial point of view, yeah, maybe that's what they're doing, but the real goal is to slow the economy down. And remember, guys, you know, the amount of goods coming into the country is slowly being squeezed out through these, you know, bogus lockdowns in China, you know, with the zero COVID policy. We're going to have zero COVID through these phony tests. You know, it's an impossible goal, of course. And when you have an impossible goal, you get to have the policy of it forever. And I was just reading that China is building permanent COVID testing stations all over the country. Unbelievable. So, you know, the idea that you're going to slow inflation through higher interest rates, when at the same time you're constricting the flow of goods, it's not going to happen, guys. You don't have to be an economic genius to figure that one out. And, you know, of course, this so-called war in Ukraine will ensure high gas prices for the foreseeable future by knocking Russia out of the Western oil market. And of course, as long as gas prices are high, guys, again, you don't have to be a economic genius to figure this one out. As long as gas prices are high, there's no way to stop inflation. Simply because, obviously, you know, everything has to be shipped and or produced with energy. And guess what, guys? Solar panels and windmills ain't going to cut it. But they know that, too. We're supposed to believe that nonsense. So you can rest assured that all the geniuses over there at the Federal Reserve know what they're doing. It's not an accident, guys. It's not because they're incompetent. It's actually much worse than that. It's on purpose. And isn't it interesting to sit back and watch, you know, a war being fomented, you know, at the same time that all these other things are going on? You know, while we're arguing about abortion, we're supposed to be supporting this horribly corrupt regime in Ukraine that, you know, has, let's just say, a vast overrepresentation of Jewry inside of it. I mean, there's no getting around that. And to not point that out is not being honest. Just like, you know, Biden, his administration is horribly overrepresented, let's say, for some reason, by dual citizen international Jews. And that is not a hateful thing to point out, a fact. It's simply a fact. And you have to ask yourself, well, why is that? Do these people possibly have a covert agenda that they're working towards? But we're seeing the West do all that they can to foment and exacerbate this conflict. You know, almost seeming to encourage further Russian aggression and to force Russia into a situation where they have no choice but to escalate things from their side. And guys, you know, the parallels between what is happening now and what America did to Japan prior to the attack on Pearl Harbor, the parallels are absolutely staggering. It's from the same playbook, in fact. The techniques are almost identical. And you really can see how, you know, wars are planned and conceived and enacted from behind the scenes, while the public is fed a completely different narrative, and usually a narrative that's highly emotional. That's why we're hearing about all the Russian atrocities in Ukraine. While this same media, this same enemy war transmissions, known as the mainstream media, completely overlooked the atrocities of American wars. Like the month-long carpet bombing of Baghdad, a major modern city brought to rubble, but we were told it was all smart bombs. You know, it was smart bombs, so no civilians were killed there. Or actually, what they called it back then was collateral damage. Collateral damage, guys. And now, you know, what's really incredible, just in the last couple of days, you guys have probably heard this, that the U.S. is essentially admitting that they're sharing strategic intelligence with Ukraine and helping them target Russian generals and Russian warships. I mean, guys, you cannot have any more of a blatant act of war than that. This is unmitigated aggression towards Russia, and the whole goal is to force Russia into escalating things from their side to limit their options with all of these sanctions and make it so Russia just has to go all in on winning this war. And what they're winning exactly is hard to know, but I find it very, very interesting that entire cities are being destroyed. And you have to ask yourself, well, who's going to rebuild these cities? And more importantly, who's going to pay for it? And who is going to be living there? Those are some questions that aren't being talked about much. And it turns out that over there in Odessa, a few years back, they openly declared that they want to create the new Khazaria. They openly said this several years back before this happened. So that's not a conspiracy theory. They actually said it in public that they wanted to create a new Khazaria in Odessa and by default Ukraine. So there's a lot of things at play here that the public is being completely left in the dark about. And, you know, I listened to a little bit of Matthew Raphael Johnson's show on the feed here on Speak Free Radio last night. And, you know, this guy is brilliant. I don't agree with all of his conclusions, but man, this guy has a real grasp of the history of this area. I'm going to get him on the show again here in the next week or two to go further in depth about this, because I don't think there's anyone else that has the kind of knowledge base that he does. And, you know, whether or not we come to the same exact conclusions, that's a different story. But this guy is a wealth of information on the subject. No question about that. So what we're really seeing here, guys, is an all-out cry for war from the West without actually saying it. They're doing everything they can to essentially have a hot conflict with Russia. And of course, I think this is all being played on both sides from a central source. And the goal is to make Russia look like it's their fault. We didn't want this war, but Russia forced us into it, just like they did with Japan and Pearl Harbor. The parallels are staggering, guys. It's the same playbook. And that said, I would like to bring on my co-host, my main man, and my partner in hate speech, Mr. Giuseppe, formerly from the District of Criminals. How are you, sir?
I'm living the dream, brother. I was just surveying my new massive studio area that I have a lot of work to set up the way I want it yet. But I used to be in a slightly larger closet, and now I'm in a finished basement. I have a rehearsal space, a recording space, my studio space. I got a lot of space now. So it's really great. So, hey, man, great introduction. And one thing that I would suggest listeners and viewers embrace is the West is not pushing for World War III and a thermonuclear war. The international Jew, the synagogue of Satan, is pushing for that. No one in the West wants that war other than the Jew and their minions. These soulless subhuman pieces of shit are doing it, not the West.
Yeah, that's a great point. It's just staggering to just sit back and watch in real time. You know, this must have been, you know, at the dawn of World War II, where, you know, over 80% of the American public was completely against being involved in what they were calling the European War. The memory of World War I was still fresh in people's minds. And, you know, essentially an entire generation of young people were sent into a meat grinder that really didn't have a whole lot to do with America. So American sentiment was completely against being involved. And, you know, the things they did to Japan, you know, by blockading their ability to get fuel, by squeezing out their economy, by actually putting our warships into their territorial water and then jumping back, just going back and forth. A whole series of techniques they used to exacerbate Japan. And then, of course, they knew the attack was coming and they let it happen. That's been absolutely proven beyond the shadow of a doubt. I don't know. What are your thoughts? Do you think they're going to succeed in expanding this conflict further, or are they going to have problems doing that?
Well, that's a very ponderous, multi-level question. I think that they are hell-bent on creating a hot World War III. And I think that the traitorous installed globalist regime, Jew regime right now, with the living glory hole Biden and all these queers and faggots and trannies and everything else and chock full of Jews in the administration, are going to make it happen. So, yes, I absolutely believe that there is going to be a hot World War III. And I regret that I'm only 1 hour south of Washington, D.C., when I wish I was like 10 hours. So, yeah, I don't think that I don't think there's any way out of it, especially when you see the idea that it's come out in the last few days that the living glory hole minions like Step and Fetch at Austin, were the behind shooting down the Moskva flagship of the Russian fleet, and they are they're just chock full of American weapons now in Eastern Europe. And yeah, I don't think there's any doubt. I mean, the only way we avoid World War III is if Russia backs down, and I don't, will they back down? I don't know.
Well, it seems to me what they're doing too is they're sort of limiting Russia's options here. The more sanctions, you know, they put on Russia, the more they cut off their energy. You know, it's just amazing too that Europe is really going to shoot itself in the foot. Of course, it's all part of the green agenda. It all fits together in this new reality they want to create. But Europe is actually talking about, you know, no more oil or gas from Russia, even though we're completely dependent on it. And come next winter, we're going to be completely screwed. And the idea that, we're going to, put American natural gas on cargo ships and, ship it all the way across the Atlantic Ocean and hope that it arrives in a timely fashion in an age where, you know, we're hearing more and more about, we can't unload the cargo ships, guys. It's just too difficult. There's too many problems because of COVID. The idea that that is a plausible solution versus a Russian pipeline that just has it flowing, you know, 24/7, 365 is laughable. And it shows you how these so-called governments actually don't really care about the well-being of their country, or they're not even looking out for the well-being of their country. They want to force this covert agenda, and what they're doing is they're just giving all these reasons why they have to do it. We have to stop Russian aggression. It's so horrible, you know. And it's just, can you imagine the EU without Russian gas and oil? I mean, they might just be talking, because I don't think they can actually do it without having people freezing to death next winter. But you know, they are talking about it. Giuseppe, what are your thoughts on that?
I know for a fact that six European countries are already buying Russian gas and oil with rubles under the table. It's probably going to be more before it all is said and done. I think that there's a real politique at play here, that Europe is not going to allow itself to be destroyed. The real Europe, not the Jew-controlled European Union. And all those people should be hunted and killed. There's no doubt about it. I would really like to see our brothers and sisters in Europe, the real Europeans, not the Kalergi installed mouth breathers, but the real Europeans rise up. I mean, they seem to be able to think, unlike American exceptionalism, which is most Americans are exceptionally stupid and weak and cowardly. So I really hope Europe wakes up and drives the Jew out. That's the only way we avoid World War III.
Yeah. I think when you're trying to play a chess game on that large of a game map, it's hard to, you know, predict exactly what's going to happen. At least Hungary and some other countries have already said, we're going to buy Russian gas and oil in rubles, no problem. You know, which is really, if you think about it, it's Russia's right to ask whatever payment method they want, whatever currency they want. Somehow, this idea that everything has to be done in dollars has been backed up by Marines and F-16s. That's been the method by which they've enforced this this dictate. And we've seen the fate of previous, you know, world leaders who dared to challenge this, you know, Saddam Hussein and Muammar Gaddafi being the two of the most, you know, blatant examples. And, you know, unfortunately for America, if the petrodollar really does come to an end, which America and Europe are doing all they can to make that happen, but we have to stop the Russians, guys. It doesn't matter what the consequences are. You know, that's what they're trying to sell us. But we're going to see inflation like we've never seen before in America. It's going to be actually incredible, because what they've been able to do is essentially spread dollar inflation around the world, so it's not so noticeable. Once it all comes home to roost, once all those chickens come home to roost in America, you're going to have essentially hyperinflation on some level. And then the only solution will be a new digital currency or something along those lines. What are your thoughts?
Well, we already have hyperinflation, Dave, and I'll give you an example. A year ago, you know, we make our own dog food, organic. We eat organic ourselves. So I went to a grocery store yesterday afternoon to do a weekly shopping to be able to do all that. A year ago, I would have paid, I don't know, around $200 for a full shopping. Yesterday, I paid almost $400, $373. And it's absurd, and yet, you know, it's going on everywhere. So, you know, my wife makes has a good career going, and she makes decent money. So, you know, we can absorb the increase, but many people cannot. The working class, the gig economy people, they're getting sodomized by the Jew. And, you know, we all know that global homo loves sodomy. And so what are they going to do? They're too stupid and cowardly. They got their panties and their trannies in a twist over Roe versus Wade, when they, yeah, what they should be doing is looking out for their own basic self-interest, but they're literally too mind controlled, too narcissistic, too vacuous to do that. So they're going to be, we need our Gibbs, man. We need our basic income. I need my check back. I really liked it during the Jubonic Jew jab when I was getting a direct deposit of $600 a week. That was great. I could stay at home and smoke weed all the time and masturbate 12 times a day and play video games. So, yeah, man, when are we going to get to that? That's in my best self-interest. So right, that's what we're looking at. It's literally, you keep saying, you know, it's parallel economies. It's going to be parallel realities. You're going to have those shitheads who then they decide they're trannies and they're going to start wearing makeup and get the government hormones. And there's people like us who want no part of it. So what is the great silent majority going to do in this country? That's how it's all going to eventually come down.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right. And of course, the role of the government is to sell all this as though, you know, hey, none of us saw this coming. You know, we didn't see the idea of terrorists crashing airplanes into buildings. We never thought of that, even though that didn't actually happen. But, you know, this idea that they didn't see this coming, the role of government is just to sell this con job and to try to keep our perception of reality in such a childlike manner. And if you step out of that perception, you're a conspiracy theorist and a bad person and probably a Nazi too. So the name calling and the labeling of thought that is outside the box is going to expand. And, I think that they're actually very afraid of what people are thinking now. What are they calling this thing? The Ministry of Disinformation or something, or Department of Disinformation?
Oh, my God. Nina Jankelshitz, I think she actually is just a inbred Jew Yeti, and I think she is a woman. I don't think she's a tranny. I just think she's a very weirdly genetic defective woman. But she is a psychopath, and mm-hmm. she has been installed by the Jews that control the living glory hole Biden. I mean, my God, what is wrong with the silent majority of this country that they allow the Jew to install such a vile, steaming pile of shit that is the Biden administration? I mean, what is wrong with the cowards in this country to accept all this? I do not understand.
Yeah. Yeah. I think too, it's just this idea that we just accept whatever the federal government wants to do, and it just keeps expanding and expanding and expanding, you know, and like essentially acting like a giant Hoover vacuum cleaner, sucking everything up in its path until there's nothing left but the federal government. Right. And that is the ultimate aim with this new system, where essentially it's like it's not really communism. It's sort of this hybrid system of communism and communitarianism sort of this scientific, trust the science, thing where scientists are going to tell you how you have to live. Because after all, you're destroying the world, guys. And if you don't listen to the science, it's all over. You got about 10 years left until it's all over, unless you do what we say. The hubris of this is off the charts. And I think it's all going to come down to whether or not people keep trusting authority figures who have certainly outed themselves in this last couple of years with the Jubonic Jew jab, as you call it, you know, where obviously at the very least, this is a completely untested experimental medical procedure. At the worst, it was an intentional attempt to cull the population and destroy the immune system and the ability to reproduce of millions upon millions of people. And, you know, there's another interesting take on this abortion issue, which is that, you know, so many women have been made sterile from this bubonic Jew jab that the rates of abortion are going to plummet because the pregnancy rates are going to plummet. We'll see if that's true. We'll kind of know. We'll see how many, you know, start looking around for how many pregnant women you see and women with newborns over the next few years. There's no way to know, but that certainly is a possibility. I'm not going to say I believe that yet, but it's not beyond the realm of possibility. What are your thoughts?
Well, everything you've just laid out very lucidly is all been on the globalist parasite to-do list since the 60s when we covered last year the Order of the New Barbarian and Dr. Day's shocking revelations. And so it's called the New World Order, the One World Government. Now they are saying the Great Reset, the 666 small bees build back better. They being the soulless satanic chicken swingers, have had a massive erection for this for 60 years, and it was always failing because the great silent majority would have nothing to do with it. Unfortunately, during those past 60 years, the Jew has managed, like the satanic cancer they are, they've managed to infiltrate big education, big government, consolidate corporate power, consolidate military power, consolidate and transfer literally trillions upon trillions of dollars stolen from the working class and the lower middle class. Yeah. And so now they are going for it. This is nothing new, Dave. This is the new world order, the global one world government. And you mentioned earlier about the ridiculousness in China with this farce that they're going to lock down everyone for zero COVID. COVID is a massive PR scam. It's the scamdemic. They created gain-of-function bioweapons and released them strategically. So what you have is most people in China, the United States, Europe, they're getting a cold or the flu or pneumonia. It's called the pick every year because the first world is so toxic, the pneumonia, influenza, common cold season, right? And so now they've augmented that with this gain-of-function bullshit. And the only reason people are getting SARS-CoV-2 is because they're stupid enough, these dumb fucks, to take the bubonic Jew jab. All the poisons are in that Jew jab. They're all in the flu Jew jab. They're all in, and it is dark quackery scientism at its height, and it all ties into the same plan, which is the Jew New World Order.
Yes, and it's not hate speech to identify the primary players. Now, I don't, you know, personally, you know, it's bigger than just, you know, the international Jews involved. I think there's other elements in this that have sort of that create this web of deception, this web of control, and you know, I don't think you can leave Freemasonry out of it, and this web of secret societies that surround Freemasonry. And then you've got the city of London, and the, you know, these sort of parasitical elite that exists within there. And I think there's been some kind of alliance formed by these different, factions that essentially constitute the New World Order. But I think there's no way that you can dismiss the fact that the ultimate level of control is the ability to create money and this Babylonian dark money magic that essentially is running Western civilization into the ground. And if you don't identify, you know, who's behind it, I don't see how you can possibly, you know, fight back. If you don't even know who you're fighting and you're unwilling to say who it is, how are you going to possibly mount any kind of defense or even inform those around you? That's why it's so forbidden talk about who's behind this, because you're a hater. That's why my show was deemed 3 hours of hate by our former network. And it's got nothing to do with hate. It's about knowledge and trying to, for us to figure out what this world really is and how it really works.
Well, you know, the great Murr Bailey likes to quote the fella Frank from North Carolina who died a year or two ago, and I don't have the quote memorized. Maybe Murr can put it in a chat room, that hate is the truth, something or other, you know, essentially the parasites hate the truth. There's a clever way, and maybe Murr can put it up and we can read it in a second or two, but it's just an obvious scam. These malignant parasites, these Satanists, these soulless subhuman pieces of shit are just going for it and use the dark magic of usury to amass amazing levels of power. I mean, they should literally be all taken off the face of the earth. And I don't understand why we do not have a warrior class that's achieved that already. And so it's a disturbing reality that's unfolding before us. I mean, I hear it just about every show I listen to or we do, someone, you or I or the guests, will say, I never thought in my lifetime I would see this, yet we're seeing it. And so it's crazy, the level of cowardliness, of ignorance, of mind control that the great unwashed normies are allowing to happen. It's just absurd. I don't get it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good point. I think that we have to be the warrior class, and I think we have to learn to sort of, we're in this, you know, fifth generational war. We're in a war that most people don't even know they're involved in. And unfortunately, what we've seen, I guess one thing that, you know, Operation COVID Hoax has taught us for sure is that at this time, the vast majority of people are just going to go along with whatever is put in front of them by the parasitical elite class. But one thing I do see is that every day their numbers are shrinking slowly, very, very slowly. And that's why they're so worried about misinformation and disinformation. And I think the end game is here. They're going to, you know, always look to China if you want to see the future system. Not that I think that the Chinese are this rogue player. They're part of this consortium that's been agreed upon behind the scenes, in my view. And I believe Russia's part of that, too, because the banks could destroy any country they want.
Right.
Let's be honest here, especially, you know, economically. And so you've got this secret agreement behind the scenes, and China's definitely part of that. And, you know, I think what the Chinese do now is you have to have a government ID to get on the internet, period. And that's all going to be tied to your, you know, biometric ID and your whether or not you're vaccinated with the toxin, you know, so I think that's what we're looking at for a future. And the ultimate end game is that you will not be able to play in the system without certain loyalty checks or loyalty pledges. And one of those will be taking an annual jujection into your body that God only knows what's actually in it. And over time, whatever's in it will get worse and worse because their behavior will get more and more bold as they keep getting away with their little schemes.
That's a great point. I mean, essentially long ago, when we first started with Russ Winter, who is going to be on next week, he's returning. We have a schedule worked out, which is great. Russ is such a brilliant guy. On your show next week, it'll be Russ Winter. And
great.
He brought up the point of, you know, the gray man strategy, which is when all these lunatics, these weak-minded boobs are going along with the jujection. I like that. That's good, Scorpio. You have to act like you're fitting in, but you're not, right? And it's like, you know, we're warriors of the truth doing what we can do at our level. And I'm not going to go out and hunt anyone at this point. The whole power of the system is going to come down on my head. It's like, it would be stupid. I have obligations to my wife and my life and my family. So
right.
That's not our place, but what is the place is when people who are trained with that should be doing that, right? There is no way the Jew-controlled legal system, the Jew-controlled government is ever going to serve the people. So, you know, there's a very simple way to allow the removal of those parasites. There aren't that many of them. They're satanic. They've murdered millions and going on billions in the next few years. So warrior class, take care of business. You know, I mean, you know, look no further than the awesome movie Fight Club and the way that movie played out. It, you know, whereas you've got the, you know, it should be the security guards of the Rothschilds, the security guards taking care of business and then disappearing, much the way RFK Jr. was killed by that planted security guard. I mean, that's what needs to happen. They need to be shown the power of the numbers of the masses. They do not control this world. The great masses allow them to feed as the cancer they are, but the cancer needs to be removed. I mean, that's the only way this is solved.
Yeah. And, you know, another interesting parallel from that, the Fight Club movie, is the idea of sort of creating your own private clubs. That's going to be another thing. These sort of private clubs that trade information, goods, services, ideas that are not open to the general public or open to being infiltrated.
Right.
By government agents, because as soon as you get any kind of movement that's too big, you can rest assured there will be agents who try to infiltrate what you're doing. So I just think we need to find new ways of doing things. And I think these private clubs that are membership based, where you trade goods, services, whatever, and ideas and brainstorm together and create new alliances, I think that's the future. And, you know, there's no easy solution. Like, well, that's not going to do it, Scorpio. Well, yeah, I don't have all the magic answers. There's no magic bean because we're in such a bad situation. But what we have to do is start taking baby steps towards a new reality. And thinking that the federal government is going to play any role in helping us is beyond naive. And it's beyond repair. It's beyond reform. So, oh, guys, here we are. We're at the top of the first hour, and stay tuned for Roger Sales. We're going to take a deep dive into citizenship and being a national and other related topics. Okay, welcome back to hour number two of Operation Scorpio. And in this hour, it is my pleasure to welcome Mr. Roger Sales to the show, a man who's been working on some very important information for many years. And essentially it's a whole new world of information that the public has been kept completely ignorant about, as this sort of parallel legal system and a secret, well, economy. And just to name a few things, Roger, how are you, sir? And welcome to the show. Okay. Well, Roger, let's just jump right into things here because our time is limited, and this is such a vast topic. And it's something that, you know, I've been getting into over the last, 6 months or so. And, you know, it's been my pleasure to meet, you know, quite a few people in the Los Angeles area who are involved in, you know, your research and applying it to their own lives. And I have to say that the caliber of people that I've been meeting has been really tremendous. It's been my pleasure to get to know independent-minded people who are actually looking for solutions to change their life and the lives of those around them. So I think that's to your credit that you have such good people listening to what you do. And maybe we could start off by just let's sort of explain to people who may not know. Let's talk about the idea of citizenship and what types of citizens there are, and the 14th Amendment and how this all kind of goes through the 14th Amendment. Maybe we could just start off there.
All right, let's start this way. First of all, I want to tell the audience that's not familiar with, not been exposed to this, this is not something that's just been come on lately. And what you're going to be exposed to today is the result of over 100 years of legal research in three men's lives. And my two teachers were really their bailiwick, if you will, was taxes. Our law teacher, that was his deal in life, was taxes. And they found the answer to the tax system, not totally at the time, have subsequently, but I got in and started, I never had a tax problem until I met these guys. And then shortly after thereafter, I had a pretty good one, and I ended up fighting the IRS in federal district court over a summons for books and records. And when I got out of that experience, I said, there's got to be a better way to do this. Okay. And that's when I started off and took their training and went down the jurisdictional path, and I found the answer. I've got the key to the matrix. Okay. Let's start with what is the matrix, Dave? You know, if you go back to the movie, let me paraphrase or quote Morpheus here. He says, you can't feel it. You can feel it. You can't see it, and you can't touch it. It's like a splinter in your mind. You're born into it. You have no idea how accurate that is. Okay. Especially that last phrase, you're born into it, because you are. And yes. So what we've got, you know, a good talk, I heard a long time ago, a good talk is somebody tells you what they're going to tell you, then they tell you, and then they tell you what they told you. So what I'm going to explain to you here very simply, I've been doing this almost 30 years now, okay? And I've come to understand it pretty well and be able to describe it a lot easier and better than I used to, for sure. What they basically do, is there anybody on the board here today? We've got Giuseppe and Dave, and was the other guy, Chris, is he with us? You got who am I speaking to today?
Just Scorpio. Giuseppe and myself. Chris has departed.
Okay.
He's long gone. Assuming,
yeah.
Well, I know both you guys are pretty sharp guys. I'm going to say, I'm assuming you're familiar with the Jim Crow laws, right?
I am, yes.
Yes.
Okay. For the audience, it may not be. They're very easily accessible. That was the period of time in our country from about 1868 all the way up to the mid-50s, when we used to have separate faculties and facilities for the races. Had white drinking fountains, black drinking fountains, white restrooms, black restrooms, white dining cars, black dining cars. Okay. So what they've done, in a very simple way to explain it to you, is they've set up a system where they put us all into the Jim Crow status, and then they've psychologically conditioned us to where they get us to agree with it and give them consent to govern us. As simple as I can put it right there. And so Dave was talking about the differences in citizenships. Now, when the country first started in the late 1700s, there was only one status, and that was a state citizen. There was no federal status, and there was no federal status until the 14th Amendment. Okay. So that encompassed about 70 years. And if you were a state citizen, you were ipso facto, by the mere fact of being a state citizen, you were a citizen of the United States of America, or, get this, Dave, or a national citizen. So if you were a state citizen, you were a citizen of the nation, therefore a national. Is that pretty clear?
Yes, absolutely.
That's not complicated at all, is it?
No, actually, it's not. You know, it's just a matter of when information is so completely new to you, it's hard to process it at first because we've been kept completely ignorant about these things. But once you start to unravel it, it's more simple than it appears when you begin.
It's incredibly simple. I mean, but the way they've done it and how they've pulled it off, they had to make it incredibly complex.
Yes.
And it's not only complex in the legal part and in the legislation and in the history, but it's complex because they've conditioned your mind. Okay. You're enslaved in your mind. I was on your program, about a year or so ago, I think for an hour there one day.
Yes.
And we got into just a little bit. You can't hardly scratch the surface on this in an hour, especially if you don't even have that full time, you know, and we were having other conversations on the side and stuff. So I asked you, and I remember asking, now I remember your response actually even more. And the two questions, are you a citizen of the United States and are you a resident? And you said your response, I've been asked that hundreds of times, right? And so let's go back and revisit that response. Well, what every time you were asked hundreds of times if you were a citizen of the United States and if you were a resident, Dave, how'd you answer those questions? And then signed something, by the way.
Yes, yeah, I'd always say, yes, of course, I'm an American citizen. I'm proudly sure.
Heart pumps that red, white, and blue stuff, right?
Yes, yes, sir.
Well, let me ask you those questions then the way what they're really asking you and see if I can elicit the same answer and response out of you, okay? So instead of asking you if you're a citizen of the United States, I'm going to ask you, are you in the same political status as former black slaves who were given federal citizenship and civil rights after the Civil War?
Well, that's essentially what they've done.
That's it right there, okay? But when I ask you that question, and you don't know what it is, you say yes. But when I ask you what the real question is, you say absolutely not, correct?
Right. Now, explain that. How exactly did they do this? This is after the Civil War. How did they get everybody under the same status as a black slave? Explain that to people who may not understand it.
Well, you know, I feel like we're jumping ahead, but with the bankruptcy. The bankruptcy is what changed the status in the system. Okay, the bankruptcy of March the 9th of 1933, when Roosevelt took the gold, all the banks, you can go look it up in Black's Law Dictionary, go look under banking holiday of 1933, okay? And Blacks will tell you it's when the banks closed for 5 days, and when they reopened, they were running now under regulations issued by the new Secretary of the Treasury, but there wasn't a Secretary of the Treasury before then, so it was the new Secretary of Treasury in the new system. Hello? Somebody say something right there?
Right.
Okay. So anyway, that's what happened. Now let's go in here. I'm going to give you some background here. Maybe this will help out. Okay. We're working on twin levels. We're working on a colloquial level, and we're working on a conceptual level. They're working on a conceptual level. We're going to get up there in a minute. Okay. So when I use the word property, Dave, if I was to say that car you've got, by the way, Dave and I have met each other. We had lunch together down here in Ecuador one day a while back. If I was to say, Dave, that car out there in the driveway, I know you told me you paid it off. Is that your property?
And you'd say, I have certificate of title, Roger.
Okay. Well, then, you'd agree, is that your property? You'd say yes, and we'd understand that, right?
No, it's not. Property cannot own property, right? Correct?
Well, that's correct, but this is what I'm trying to get across to the audience is to explain to you these twin levels that we're working on. When yes. I say that and we have that conversation on the colloquial level, we both understand what we're talking about. Okay, but if we were to go into court and use that conversation, it wouldn't go anywhere because it doesn't fit in there. And the reason for that is because conceptually, property is a right and not a thing. And the car is a thing, and your property is a right in and to the thing. So there's a slight difference there. It may not seem real important, but it's incredibly important, and it illustrates perfectly this twin level that we're working on when we use these words. You know, it's like Rush Limbaugh used to say, words mean things, okay? And the title of my book is Government by the Sovereign to Serf, is the preface. It says Government by the Treachery and Deception of Words, and that's what we got going on here, okay? And one of the ways they're doing it, this is this colloquial and conceptual level. So I wanted to get to that property because I'm going to show you how the system changed and how you can take that, now that you understand the legal definition behind it and what it really means, and take that incident. I'm going to show you exactly what happened. We went up, we were using gold and silver to do commerce, right? We were free people. No one had a property right in us. We could go buy things and pay for them, pay the bill with real money, because no one had a property right in us. And we actually could go get other property and have a property right in it because no one had a property right in us. Does that make sense? In other words, just like you said a minute ago, property can't own property. Okay. So after that, when they reopened up after being closed for 5 days, we didn't have gold anymore. They took it all. And they put us in a new system at that point, and it's evidenced by the fact that we all used paper and the debt currency after that. Because the system had switched, they had put a property right in everyone as sureties for this hypothecated bankruptcy that they pulled off. And that's why we used the fiat money, because it's debt money. And we can't own anything because somebody has a property right in us now. So we can't pay for things. We can only discharge the debt. We can't pay the debt. And we can't own anything. So we have, but we can control things. So you can control that car, Dave. And it's exactly like you said, you've got a certificate of title. Well, the certificate of title is not the title. It's a certificate of a title. Okay. And all those things represent the fact that the system was changed. And what they did, they'd had this set up after the Civil War with the 14th Amendment and the black status, citizen of the United States. And all they did was just drag everybody into that condition at that point. And right there with the taking of the solid money and giving us the debt money, because we're property now and we can't own things, tells you exactly what happened right then. Okay. Now, there's a great work on that called Trading with the Enemy Act that was done about 30 years ago by a veterinarian in eastern Colorado named Eugene Schroeder. Are y'all familiar with that project and his work, the Trading with the Enemy Act by Eugene Schroeder? Have either one of you stumbled onto that at this point?
I have not. Giuseppe, how about you? You're muted.
Okay. All right. Well, if you have
no idea.
Okay. Well, that's something you ought to look into. Eugene Schroeder did a wonderful job on that. It all centers around what I just talked about. Now, one of the things that came out of that, quite honestly, it didn't register with me for years until recently. In 1917, in World War I, they passed a piece of legislation called the Trading with the Enemy Act, and the enemy was Germans. Okay. In 1933, they pulled that legislation forward. They took out the word Germans and put in citizens of the United States. So since March the 9th and the bankruptcy, citizens of the United States have been considered the enemy. And I think you're seeing that here in the last couple of years. Okay. So that was a real pivotal event. That's when the system was switched. It was set up, though, with the Civil War. And I can go back, and hopefully before we get finished today, we'll have to be able to do this exercise. But I can tell you, and put the 13th and the 14th Amendments together and analyze them now that we know what they were trying to accomplish in the end game here. And I'm going to tell you that my firm belief is the Civil War was started and fought simply to get those two amendments in the Constitution so they could control the world with it 100 years later, because that's what they're doing. Okay. So it's extremely important information. As I was saying earlier, from the start of the country up to the Civil War, there was only one political status, and that was the state citizen. And you can go back and it's replete in all the old law cases. Okay. Just all tons of cases through the whole century of the 1800s. And it deals with mostly state citizens. These are all in there easily to identify. But after the Civil War, here's the problem that they had, is that there was no federal citizenship. And those people that were born and raised in D.C. and the territories were not only not citizens of the United States of America, they couldn't become one by anything short of an amendment to the Constitution. And that's the little loophole in the situation that they drove this into. Okay. They drove the 18-wheeler through the whole loophole. And they set up a secondary citizenship, supposedly for the blacks, and we'll continue to leave it at that point. Although I think it's something I've never even thought of until recently because of reading some of these old cases. Okay. And there's a verbiage in there about this right there. It talks about the main case, the benchmark case on the 14th Amendment is called the slaughterhouse cases. It's a plural, the cases. It came out of Louisiana. And that was in 1871. The 14th Amendment was ratified in 1868. So it was, if you read that case and them discussing these points and this incident, it's like if we were sitting around going, boy, Giuseppe and Dave, you remember when all those guys got arrested on January 6th? I mean, it's that recent memory kind of stuff. Okay. So in that case, they tell you that because of the recent Dred Scott decision, and it became a real topic of conversation in D.C. because of this lack of being able to really identify with the country and have a political status. And it was in the publications, it was in the journals, it was all over the circles, the political circles in D.C., and it came out that the only thing that could remedy this was an amendment of the to the Constitution. There's the 14th Amendment. Okay,
so let me reiterate, but prior to the Civil War, prior to the Civil War, the only kind of citizen was a state citizen. There was no United States citizen. Is that correct?
There was no federal citizenship. That's what I'm telling you straight out of the slaughterhouse cases.
Right.
Not only was it for D.C., it was also for all the territories. Those people were in limbo. They had no political status. Okay, so they passed the 13th and the 14th Amendment, and they basically pulled the black man off the southern plantation and put him on the federal plantation. Okay, but they didn't give him the same status that the white men that had founded and ran the country had. And if you think they did, you probably need to go soak your head in a pickle jar somewhere. Okay. So anyway, that's what they did. They gave them a secondary and a subsidiary citizenship that is, in essence, a voluntary servitude entrance into the feudal system. Okay. Now, we didn't find that anybody in the court system recognized that until 1896. There's a very, very important case. Remember when Obama was in, all the Obama birthers? Well, this is the case that all of those guys used, because this is the number one case in the history of our country, from the Supreme Court at least, on these important issues of denizenship, citizenship, etc. And that case is called U.S. versus Wong Kim Ark. U.S. versus Wong Kim Ark. And in that very important, pivotal case, it was dealing obviously with a Chinaman, in the dissent, not only the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court named Fuller, but another great justice, one of the greatest justices ever to sit on the Supreme Court in our country, named John Harlan, who actually had a nickname called the Great Dissenter. Okay. And John Harlan and Chief Justice Fuller wrote the dissent in Wong Kim Ark, and they came, they recognized it, and they said the relationship of this relationship of the 14th Amendment is the relationship of a liege man to his liege lord. Now that's feudal. Okay. You know, in the movies, when your guy hits his chest with his fist and goes, "Yes, my liege." Okay. That's that right there. All right. And that he said in that case, in the dissent, they say this is the relationship of a liege man to a liege lord. It is absolutely an unbending, no matter of time or space. And it basically is this feudal system. Those are feudal terms. And this was coming onto our country just as England was being relieved of its inconvenience. Okay. So England had this voluntary servitude system after 1066. They didn't have it before 1066, but when William the Conqueror conquered England and came over, he brought the European common law with him and overlaid the Anglo-Saxon common law, and the European law contained feudalism. So this is an era, one of those things that you need to stop, because most people, I mean, if I ask you guys, Giuseppe, Dave, if you tell me everything you know about the feudal system.
Well, exactly. Could you describe the feudal system, like, in a couple of sentences? What is the feudal system, and what's the essence of it?
I'll tell you where it came from and how it originated. Okay, it came out of the downfall of Rome. I don't know if you can hear that jet going over. We're in the approach deal today. And as Rome fell, especially the western part of the empire, which involved Spain, and the Goths and the Visigoths came down from Europe, and what they would do is they'd isolate the cities, see? they'd go in and put the cities under siege. And as the people that could escape or saw what was coming and got out, and they either jumped in the Mediterranean and got eaten by sharks, or they went inland. Well, most of the land was owned by Roman generals and politicians. And so they'd go to wherever there was some sort of a house or this land holding, and they'd go and say, please give us some protection. And the guy's going, well, the Visigoths are coming. I could use some extra help. I'll tell you what, you give me your allegiance and I'll give you protection. There's the feudal system. That's the absolute basis of what we call jurisdiction. Protection for allegiance, allegiance for protection. The relationship between a liege man and his liege lord. And that's jurisdiction. Okay. Today, this moment, that's jurisdiction, and that's where it comes from. We take that colloquially, and we say, if you receive the benefits, you owe the duty. Have you ever heard that phrase? Okay. That's the same thing. If you receive the benefit, you owe the duty, the relationship between a liege man and a liege lord. And that's that jurisdictional relationship. Okay. That's where it came from. It was.
I want to thank
entertain your question a second. This has got 1,000 years of legal precedent. That's 4 times longer than our country's been around. Okay. So this isn't chopped chicken liver we're dealing with here. And the reason they like that system is because they've got you in a case and a status called a voluntary servitude. You volunteered into it. You just didn't know it. Okay.
Right.
And if you don't understand the feudal system and you don't understand that condition, you cannot easily put the remedy together that, hey, I volunteered in, I can volunteer out.
Okay. Now that's very, very important. Now, I just want to briefly thank Equicentric and Mer Bailey for all the links. They're posting the links of what you're talking about in the on the video feed, so people can see and click on the links if they want to. And I want to get Giuseppe's take and maybe a comment from Giuseppe before you continue. Giuseppe, go ahead, sir.
Well, I'd like to go back to the idea of the 14th Amendment. So as far as my research shows, it was never constitutionally ratified.
Well,
let me finish, please. And then the other idea that I'd like you maybe to elaborate a little more is how is it that we were not citizens before the 14th Amendment in 1933? From what I've read of the Constitution, they laid out, for example, no person who's not a citizen cannot be president of the United States. So I'm not exactly understanding where you're going with the 14th Amendment being so vital to all this.
Well, you were a citizen up to that point. There's two, white and black. That's what the Jim Crow laws were. Uh-huh. And those went all the way up through World War II. We used to have black battalions. They wouldn't even intermingle and mix in the war. Okay. Now, that didn't get turned around until 1954, and we'll get to that. All right. But there's always been two, and there's still two. You see, these people can't just do away with all that history. They don't have that power. They've got to go in and set up an alter ego type of situation and veneer over it and hide it, which is what they've done here. They've hidden it at the state citizen. They've hidden as a national.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Now, they're real slick. Okay. This is like the guys in the fair that are at the table with the felt tablecloth. which one's the pee under? Because that's exactly what's going on here. Okay. Is they've hidden the national status behind another national status that's only American Samoans and Swains Island people. And they're called non-citizen nationals, because they're the only territory in the whole U.S. system that's unincorporated. And what they've done is they left their native culture there, where the people actually have ownership of their land. In American Samoa, it's called the FA hyphen Samoan culture. And by the people that own the land determines who sits in the legislature and makes the laws. Okay. But they can't be birthright citizens. That's what 14th Amendment citizenship is referred to. They can't be 14th Amendment citizens without naturalizing. And they're not happy about it because they want the goodies, and they can't get the goodies without being citizens of the United States. And they're legitimately in the territories, in the system. They think they ought to have that, and they don't know. And there's been two cases that have gone up through the court system here in the last couple of years of them trying to acquire this at birth. and they won't even let the cases go forward, because if they ever hurt them, it'll blow the whole lid off this scheme. So they put them and labeled them non-citizen nationals, and then they hid the old state national behind them. Okay, so that's what's going on here. Now, on your question, Giuseppe, about the 14th Amendment, that's probably true. But, I mean, since 1871, we've been having court cases and a whole system of government's built on it. So if you think that if you want to try and go in and tear that down, good luck. You're going to get a legal concept called custom and usage, which is we've been doing it for 150 years, man. That's the way it is. If it wasn't, somebody would have brought it up and it would have been dealt with. And I got to tell you that if you go back and study it, here's what happened. They passed the 13th Amendment in June. Now, this is pretty interesting, actually. And they allowed the Southern legislators back in to vote on the amendment. But 6 months later, when they went to pass the 14th Amendment, they wouldn't let them in. So it did not have a proper quorum, and it probably should never have been passed. But that's what happened, and we've been living with it ever since, and the whole system of government and the world's totally run on it. So you can go run your mouth on it not being legally ratified, and you're never going to get any traction on that. Okay?
Okay. Oh, excellent point. Thanks.
Okay.
Yeah.
Custom and usage. It's an old legal concept.
All right.
So,
right.
Yes.
No, Roger, explain to us the difference, or for those listening, the difference between a state citizen and a U.S. national citizen. What are the differences, and what does it mean to us? Like, why is that an important thing to people listening?
I'm going to show you the validity of this, okay? Do either one of you guys got a problem with this statement? Wikipedia is one of the most corrupt information sites on the internet.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Do you agree with that? All right. What I'd like for you to do while I'm talking here, would you go to Wikipedia? Bring sure. up Wikipedia, and I want you to type in citizenship of the United States.
Okay.
And go to that page, and you're not going to believe that Wikipedia covers this. This is all the legal research you need to do is go to corrupt Wikipedia to find your freedom.
It's hidden in plain sight.
Right. It's all around you. You've just never seen it before because they've been screwing with your mind. Okay. So if you'll bring up that page, you'll see the first two paragraphs are dealing with the 14th Amendment. Okay. And then they quote the 14th Amendment, part of it. And what I want to direct your attention to is the third paragraph, that paragraph immediately under the where they quote the 14th Amendment. Dave, could you or Giuseppe read that? It starts out with nationality status, I believe, and that's in italics.
Okay, Giuseppe's got it up. Go ahead,
sir.
Let's
see. Well, nationality status. Okay, I'm at citizenship of the United States.
Right. The third paragraph is the one you want to key on. There's two on the 14th Amendment. They quote the first part of the 14th Amendment in a box. And the third paragraph there is what I'd like for you to read. It's about state citizenship. It ties it to this term.
Well, maybe there's more than one citizenship page because this one doesn't. The third paragraph starts with national citizenship signifies.
Okay. There it is. Go.
That's
national. There's national. That's what we're talking about. Being okay. A national, right?
Okay.
It starts the paragraph. National citizenship.
Right in italics. Okay. National citizenship.
And there's Giuseppe. And there's not a hot link underneath it either. It's just italicized. How about that?
Yep. Here, I'll read it now. If that's the paragraph you want. National citizenship signifies membership in the country as a whole. State citizenship, in contrast, signifies a relation between a person and a particular state and has application generally limited to domestic matters. State citizenship may affect 1. Tax decisions, 2. Eligibility for some state-provided benefits, such as higher education, and 3. Eligibility for state political posts, such as United States Senator. At the time of the American Civil War, state citizenship assumed a much increased importance when it was widely deemed to have a prior claim over the citizens' loyalty in the seceding southern states.
Okay. Well, let's go back to our little relationship, protection for allegiance, allegiance for protection. The state citizen was a citizen of the nation, the United States of America. The new one is a federal and territorial citizen called a citizen of the United States. And they're not the same. They're totally 100% different. Okay. And literally, the federal government, if you make this change, the federal government loses all its authority and jurisdiction over you, with the exception, that's over 500 administrative agencies now, okay? They totally lose any jurisdiction over you. They can't charge you with hate crimes. They can't charge you with being a white supremacist. They can't charge you with any of that stuff, because those crimes are all done through agencies, and they're all written for residents or citizens of the United States. And if you file this paperwork, you're not one of those, and you fall out of that jurisdictional responsibility. Okay. I know that it sounds hard to believe. It's this simple, but it's absolutely this simple. There's only two sections of any of the Code of Federal Regulations that anybody has got any responsibility for, and that's two sections of the tax code, which are both constitutional taxes, 871B and 877B, and I can show you that in the IRS Code of Federal Regulations, okay, and show you how they do all this word trickery to hide this stuff. So why don't you let me do that right now? Let's go over, let's approach this way. Have either one of you guys ever spent much time in a law library?
In college, I took a couple of administrative law courses for my journalism degree, and I thought about going to law school. So I have been in law libraries, yes.
All right.
I have not, Roger, but I've been meeting people at these groups who do spend time in law libraries researching the kind of things you're talking about. So please continue.
All right. There's three sets of law books in a law library. All right. The first one's called the Organic Statutes at Large. It's that big set of books over on the shelf with all the dust on them, because nobody ever goes over there. And that's the ones that if you pick up volume one there and open up the front cover, you'll see the Declaration of Independence, the Articles of Confederation, the Northwest Territory Ordinances, and the Constitution. Who do you think those law books apply to? Okay. So the next set of law books is the ones we're a lot more familiar with, because our noses are rubbed in them all the time, and that's called the United States Code, which is actually the Roman civil law, okay? Code of Justinian, Code of Bismarck, all that stuff, all right? And so the third book of law books is called the Code of Federal Regulations, CFR. And that's the playbook and the Bible of the administrative state, because that's where the agencies live. Okay. Now, what happens when you pass a law, it's passed by the House, passed by the Senate. If it doesn't agree, they go into a conference committee. When they agree and moves on, it gets signed by whoever is acting as president. And at that point, it's assumed to be constitutional, and they put it over into the statutes at large, the organic laws of the country. Now they pull that over into the United States Code, the Roman Civil Code, and you can go and look at the first volume there, and if you open the first page, you'll see a list of all the 50 titles, and they'll be designated whether they're non-positive law or positive law. Well, what do you mean non-positive law? Doesn't that sound a little fishy to you? Okay. Well, here's what they do. If they're pulling out, don't forget, when it goes in the first set of books, it's considered to be constitutional. Okay. May not be, but it's considered to be. Then they pull it over here to the code. If they pull it over whole meal, whole cloth, it's positive law, because it came from a place that's supposed to be legitimately constitutional. But if they monkey with it, or it never even went over there, and I'm going to give you a perfect example of that in a second, it's considered non-positive law. All right. And then they take the subject matter and they assign it to whichever agency covers that subject matter. And they go in and do what's called promulgating regulations. Okay. Rules and regulations. How about this term? Public policy. This is public policy, because it's not laws passed by your representative. They take those laws and they rewrite them as regulations, sometimes with 180 degrees difference in the meaning of them. The application, Okay. And so now it's called public policy instead of law. And there's policy for the serfs. That's you guys and everybody else. And that's the administrative state. This is the deep state right here, where laws are made by men who are not elected but appointed, and they go out and enforce them on you. How about that?
That's something else. Giuseppe, do you have any comments? This is mind-blowing in a way.
Well, yeah. I mean, essentially what you're describing is the great parasitic usury system, which, as you're outlining, we volunteer to be part of because we're born into the society and there's all these machinations. But realistically, how many people can step out of that life and do what you're talking about?
Everybody that wants to, that's a citizen of the United States. Let's go back, and what I want to cover is go back to the feudal system, and we'll come back to this regulation thing in a little bit. But I'm kind of jumping around from the normal way I do this, just kind of the way we started here today. The where was I going to go with that, dadgummit? The feudal part of this, how you got into this, is the way that in the feudal system, there's two types of serfs. There's an involuntary serf and a voluntary serf. Now, the involuntary serf is much of a similar condition as to black slaves in our country. There's only one way that they could get out of that condition. And that would, believe it or not, guys, that was if they were a bastard. If they were a bastard, there was always a chance they were fathered by the lord of the manor. And that's the only way they could get out of that condition. Now, the other condition is called a voluntary serf, and this was the English variety of slavery, as it's written in the old law books. And what happened here, have you ever heard of an oath of fealty?
Yes.
Okay, then you know a little bit about this. There was one in Monty Python's Holy Grail. You can go look it up on the web. And I encourage people, please go look this stuff up. Don't come back, well, I heard this guy on the radio say, okay? Because then it's just somebody told you something. When you go look at this stuff yourself, you make it yours. And it's a whole different matter. And that's what I try and give everybody is references where they can go see that nobody's woofing you here. And you go check this stuff out and make this information yours, okay?
So, Roger, that's a great point. Not to interrupt you, but
guys in London, he can't feed his family. He got a little hyperinflation. They blew up a few of the food processing centers around London, and he needed to go out and feed the family. So he went out and found the nearest manor and went into voluntary servitude. Now, when he went into that condition, he went through what's called an oath of fealty. It's contract. Okay, this is contract. It's just a contract you're not familiar with because you never heard of it before. All right. And it runs generationally silently. Okay. So your great great grandfather does this. He goes out to the manor. He gets a hold of the lord. He says, I need to move out. He said, well, I got one more plot of land back there I'll be happy to give you, but you need to come in here and let's get this official stuff done. So he has an oath of fealty. What happens in that oath of fealty is the incoming serf is on his knees. He puts his hands above his head like he's praying. The lord of the manor stands over him, puts his hands over his hands. It's witnessed by the other serfs on the manor as witnesses because it's a contract, and the new incoming villain pledges his body and his worldly goods to the lord of the manor. He pledges his body as property, and because now property can't own property, he can't own his worldly goods, so the lord of the manor owns his goods and him. So that's the condition. It's very similar to sharecropping 40 acres and a mule in our country. Okay. And then that contract runs generationally because he's property. If you've got a bull and a cow out in the back pasture and they have a calf, whose calf is it? It's yours. And it's the same thing here, exact same principle. He's got a property ownership, and you, the villain is called, the man's called a villain, a wife's called a knave, okay? He's got property rights in the villain and the knave, and when they produce a progeny, then that's his too. And that is the kids born into the same condition. And if things are good on the manor and he stays there and he has children, he and his wife, they're born into the same condition. It could be five generations down the line, but if you were the person that wanted to volunteer out, you could volunteer out because it was your great-great-grandfather that volunteered in, and they've got to honor that. And that's the system they're running, and that's why you can get out of this. Okay? Does that make sense?
It does, Roger. And, you know, I just want to reiterate something that you said earlier that, you know, when you get into this kind of information, you really do have to start looking into it yourself and do your own research. This is the only kind of research you can do that's actually interactive. And what I mean by that is, as you start to get deeper into it, there's things you can do that'll actually change your life. You're not just sort of researching what the Illuminati or, you know, or the Jewish cabal wants to do to us. You're actually finding ways to opt out and to change things. And this is the only information in which you can do it. And I have to say, it's a little bit addictive once you start getting into it because you want to learn more and more and more.
Well, you never, it's a process and you're never going to be done with it. I've been messing with this 30 years and I'm still realizing things I'd never realized before. And I've been immersed in it for a long time. Okay. It's very deep. It's extremely complex. It's incredibly cunning and deceitful. I mean, when you get your arms around this, you will marvel at these guys and you'll never call them stupid again. Okay? Because they're not stupid. All right? This is some slick stuff right here. All right? So they have that in the background. We have the Civil War. They bring this up and they impute it into this new citizen of the United States status. Okay? And that's what caused the Jim Crow laws. All right. Now, what they did as they continued their agenda and they went into the turn of last century, we got the Federal Reserve Act passed and all that stuff, right? 13th Amendment, 17th Amendment, 16th Amendment. And then they go in, not the 13th, 16th, and 17th is what I'm thinking of. And then they go in, and the very first depression was in 1920-21. It was a short-lived depression. Because I think it was Coolidge that was president, and he didn't do what they wanted him to do. He let the thing work itself out, and it worked itself out in a very short period of time, okay? And so it was in that period of time when they passed the birth certificate law, okay? So they knew that, listen, they've had this thing planned out for 150-plus years, all right? So yes. They passed the birth certificate law, first time it had ever been passed in our country. So 12 years later, when they bankrupted it and switched the system, they had 12 years of birth certificates to run on. What importance is the birth certificate? A lot of people in our legal patriot research area all these years, you know, people are looking for this, what we've got right here and what I'm explaining to you. They're looking for the jurisdictional nexus on how to get out. You know, the question is, how's that man over there able to make these regulations and enforce them on me? What gives him that power? That's the question people have been looking for 40 plus years here. Nobody's ever found it because it's just so slick, man. Okay. So what they did was they've got these birth certificates. They got 12 years of them. The birth certificate is a, if you want to go look it up, and I encourage you guys to go look this stuff up. Make this information yours, okay? We're not in maritime law. We're not in admiralty law. That's mis- and disinformation. We're under the Babylonian merchant code for thousands of years called the law merchant, now referred to as the Uniform Commercial Code. How do I know? I know because I go and look at the remedies that are being used. And remedies are not the same in all bodies of law. The actions are not the same. The people that sit over the proceedings are not called the same thing. They're all different. Okay. So what remedies are they using here which tell us which body of law we're dealing with? They're called self-help remedies. You probably don't know what those are. With that label. If I told you lien, levy, garnishment, and seizure, however, you'd know exactly what they are, wouldn't you? Those are called self-help remedies because you don't have to go to court to be able to execute the remedy. They're only available and only used in two areas in the entire history of the planet. One is the law merchant, in other words, is used in the UCC, And the other one was the Babylonian Merchant Code was the system of law that was used on the manors in the feudal system for 1,000 years. Okay. So lien, levy, garnishment, and seizure tell you exactly what system of law we're under. We're under the merchant law. Okay. You got any questions on that?
Well, this is fascinating. And, you know, talking about the birth certificate, you know, it turns out that the birth certificates are actually used to trade on the stock market. And there's all kinds of companies that are using this money to trade and to as collateral for the government. Maybe you could go into that a little bit. We only have about 2 minutes, though, before the top of the hour. Okay. Yes, Roger. Sorry about that. We had a little technical.
Whatever happened when we got cut off here, let's go back to that.
Yeah, hold on, Roger. Scorpio's got needs to take the mic. We're getting near the top of the hour.
Yeah, we've only got about a minute left. And when we return, I really want to go back to the idea of the straw man and how the birth certificates are used. Maybe you give us a little preview. We got about a minute before we hit the top of the hour.
Well, first thing I'm going to say is get that word straw man out of your lexicon.
Oh, it looks like I've lost Roger again. So we're going to have to get him back on. My apologies to the listeners here. Little technical difficulty here with coordinating the new software and the new system. We'll have to work on getting Roger back once the top of the hour break is over. So everyone stay tuned. We're going to get into this idea of the bonds and the credit behind your name, the birth certificate, and really kind of this parallel economic system that's sort of operating unbeknownst to most people. So everyone stay tuned, and we're also going to take calls next hour. So start getting your questions ready. Okay, welcome back to the third and final hour of Operation Scorpio. And we're going to continue our conversation with Mr. Roger Sales. I apologize for the little technical difficulties Scorpio. We had there at the very end of the hour, but I think we've got them all ironed out now. And Roger, before the end of the hour, we were sort of just touching upon the bonds and the credit and all that. So maybe briefly you could go into that, and then I really want to get into the affidavit and how to change your status. So maybe you could just go into the bonds and the birth certificate briefly, and then we'll go on to the affidavits.
Can you hear him now, Roger?
I can hear him now.
Okay, yeah. Scorpio, hold on.
I can hear
one. Okay, that's not the point I'm making. You cannot look at that studio feed screen. That blows up the connection between.
I understand.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. So, yeah. Just go by your watch. Okay. Great.
Yeah. Okay. So Roger, if you heard the question, maybe you could just go briefly into the bonds and the birth certificate and the credit. And then I really want to focus on the affidavit and your method for getting out of the matrix.
Affidavit's pretty simple. This is what one of my better students was a 4-year scholarship football player, University of Texas, pretty fearless. He stumbled on me a number of years ago, and he got hung up on this birth certificate thing. And he's the one that got us this really, really critical information, in all honesty. He has two daughters. They're both born at the same hospital in Austin. I don't know which one. But he took it upon himself to go down there and start investigating this. And so he went down in very casual, like I'm about today, cutoffs and T-shirt and flip-flops, with his two daughters in tow, and he goes down up to the administrative floor there, and he starts bugging the lady at the counter. Well, she comes out with a piece of paper called, finally, a verification of facts, a VOF, and it's got all of the information of the child's birth, weight, hair color, eye color, all that stuff. And then there's two places at the bottom where the parents are supposed to sign, and it was unsigned. And so he kept bugging her about it, and she said, look, she got tired of him finally. He was just saying his story was he's building a folder of important documents for his daughter, so in case they never needed it later in life, they wouldn't have to go search it for it. Pretty good story, okay? And so he bugs the lady enough, and she goes, look, I'm going to send you down to the office in the basement where this stuff is handled. Okay. So he goes down there, same thing, daughter, same story. The little lady at the counter, after he tells her what he's after, she goes, wait a minute. and she goes away for about 10 minutes. And when she comes back, the first words out of her mouth are, "You're not going to hold anything I tell you against us, are you?" Okay, which is a little suspect. And so here's the story. When a baby is born in any hospital in the United States, first of all, every hospital in the United States has a terminal in there that's put in there by the federal government. Okay, very simplistic, no fancy software, very basic stuff. When the child is born, this document of verification of facts is produced. It has all of the baby's important, weight, height, eye color, all that stuff, and the parents don't sign it. Okay, the parents don't sign it because the parents are already in servitude. The presumption of law is on them. They don't have not opted out, and so the baby is automatically born under this presumption of law, okay, going back as a surety for the bankruptcy that was hypothecated in 33. Now, once that paper is done, they carry it over to that computer terminal, and they input that data, and it's sent to the Bureau of Vital Statistics, where the birth certificate is printed. After the birth certificate is printed, it's put in a bank safe with armed guards 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Why? Because in commercial law, the secondary purpose that this, first of all, it's a certificate showing all the information of your birth, all right? But the secondary underlying usage of this comes out of commercial law, and it's a doc. Again, I really encourage you to go look this stuff up, okay? It's a document called a warehouse receipt. A warehouse receipt. And in the equity law, the paper takes on the quality of the good, and the good becomes the paper. That's why they put it in a bank safe. What they're doing is they're collateralizing your future income, and they take the birth certificate and they attach it to the bonds. 6 month, 1 year, 3 year, 5 year, benchmark 10 year, 30 year, or whatever. And so those are sold in the open market and the bond sales, and it's that financing that comes back that runs the country. Therefore, it's your future labor, which is extracted through the tax system, and that goes to pay the coupon payment to the bondholders. The tax system is the critical link in the entire system. Without that, it wouldn't work at all, okay? So that's what's going on, all right? What I'd like for you to do, Dave, you or Giuseppe, either one of you that can get on a computer, I'd like to have you guys read this rather than me tell the audience. But for the audience, we're going to go to the State Department and go to a policy document on the State Department's website. Is that cool? Travel.state.gov.
Okay, I've got that page bookmarked, and I'll pull it up.
Okay. Okay, good.
Yeah.
Travel.state.gov, and for the audience that you don't have it bookmarked yet, what we're going to do is go to the search field up there at the top right, and we're going to put in Certificate of Non-Citizen Nationality. Remember where we were relating back to the American Samoans earlier? This is for them. A Certificate of Non-Citizen Nationality. Now, this is a policy statement, okay? And what they're telling them is that we used to issue to you nice folks down there this certificate, and people were requesting it, but because the cost of paper and ink has gotten so exorbitant, we don't print those anymore, right? So we encourage you just to apply for a passport. That's what that letter says. But because they're dealing with American Samoans and they're telling the lie, they've got to set it up with the truth. And this is probably the most truthful you're ever going to see these lying, thieving, murdering, slaving pieces of human garbage right here. I'm going to have Dave read it to you because Dave's got it up already. And what I'd like Dave to do, the INA is called the Immigration and Naturalization Act. Okay.
Right.
Dave, would you read the first 10 words on the third paragraph, please?
Okay. Of the last paragraph or the third?
The third paragraph.
Okay.
First 10 words.
Okay. As defined, and note, guys, this is from an official state gov state.gov, federal government website. This isn't some conspiracy
theory. This is a policy document from the State Department.
Right. So this isn't a conspiracy theory. Okay. As defined by the INA, all U.S. citizens are U.S. nationals, but only a relatively small number of persons.
Just to tell you the rest, but others aren't citizens, and that's the American Samoans. Remember me telling you they can't be 14th Amendment citizens without naturalizing. So that's the whole rest of that policy statement deals with them. But we want to concentrate on those first 10 words, especially the last four or five. All U.S. citizens are U.S. nationals. Isn't that what it says right there, Dave, again?
That's what it says. As defined by the INA, all U.S. citizens are U.S. nationals, but only a relatively small number of persons acquire U.S. nationality without becoming U.S. citizens.
And that's the Samoans. Okay, so let me go to Giuseppe here because he's kind of new. Dave and I have discussed this a little bit. Giuseppe, let me ask you a couple of questions. Did you know you had a dual political status?
No, I did not.
Have you ever been asked if you were a national?
No, I have not.
Have you ever been asked if you're a citizen of the United States or a national?
I've been asked if I'm a citizen of the United States when I've traveled out of the country. Yep.
Well, you've been asked that when you're in the country too, but regardless. So if they're equal, why haven't they ever asked you if you were either one or if you were one or the other? They've only asked you the one side, the citizen of the United States. That's called a leading question in law, and this is lack of full disclosure from the federal government. This is the first layer of fraud right here. Okay? Now, so right there, if you'll go down a little bit under that that policy statement, it gives you some verbiage from the State Department there, Dave. And a little bit underneath it, it takes a statement out of the Immigration and Naturalization Act. It's actually from the Nationality Act of 1940, which is over in that statutes at large group of books over there with all the dust on them. And that's at the very first top A definition of the Nationality Act of 1940. It says this, what I'm going to repeat to you is on that policy document right there. And it says a national owes total allegiance to a small S state. You remember earlier when we were talking about the feudal system and jurisdiction? Allegiance for protection, protection for allegiance. The root of jurisdiction. And there it is from the Immigration Naturalization Act and from the Nationality Act of 1940. A national owes total allegiance to a small S state. Well, if you go down a little bit further, it'll tell you what the federal states are, D.C. and the territories, and they're capital S. So a small S state has got to be one of the original states. And if you owe total allegiance to it, then that small state is giving you protection. There's your formula for jurisdiction, protection for allegiance, allegiance for protection. You're a state citizen. Otherwise called a citizen of the United States of America and otherwise labeled as a U.S. national. They're all the same thing.
Right, and it's interesting how they use this deceptive labeling to try to confuse.
They change the damn labels, you know. Yes. I mean, I can show you four or five different labels for this political status. We call a state citizen or a national. They call it a territorial citizen over here. I'm going to explain to you in a minute where it is in the IRS code. In the IRS code, they call it a non-resident alien. Somewhere else, they call it something else. Okay, and that's why I could never pin it down, Dave, until I decided to move to Argentina and had to go get my first passport in my life. I was scared of interfacing with the federal government just like everybody else, okay? So I reluctantly went to the post office. I picked up a DS-11, a DS-82. That's the first time in a renewal form. I went back home. I put my feet up on my desk to read it, and there at the top of the first page is the answer I've been looking for 15 years. I'm not kidding you. Okay. And the answer was Secretary of State of the United States of America at the top, passport application. And back in those days, on the front page of the printed version, they had this thing called a warning box. Okay. They move it around. They hide it in the instructions. All right. The warning box says, you know, the in pharmaceuticals and drugs, they call it a black box warning. when you got some kind of dangerous something with a drug, and there's a rectangular box, and up in the upper left-hand corner in big capital letters, it says warning, and then it tells you whatever you're supposed to be warned about. Well, they've got that in the instructions, but without the black box. It just says warning. Okay. It says you can attach documentation, comma, including affidavits, comma, but you better not lie or we're going to hit you with these seven or eight sections of the code. Well, they don't tell you what you can attach documentation for. They just tell you you can attach it. And it can be an affidavit. When I saw the word affidavit and I saw Secretary of State, I knew I had them. Okay.
Right.
And so if you read through the instructions, we're going to go down and let's go to the oath and the passport. Okay. By the way, they've changed the oath since I started teaching this to cover their slaving butts. Okay. And so the old oath says, I swear under penalty of perjury, I am a citizen of the United States, parentheses, or a non-citizen national, close parentheses, and have not since acquiring United States citizenship, parentheses, or U.S. nationality, close parentheses, violated any of the acts and conditions listed on page so-and-so of the instructions, parentheses, unless explanatory statement is attached, close parentheses. I swear under penalty of perjury the foregoing is true and correct. So let me ask you a couple of questions. They say that if you've been caught over in Thailand boinking little girls or little boys, are probably doing something with drugs, violating these acts and conditions, they're in the oath. It tells you to attach an explanatory statement. But twice above that in the preceding part of that sentence, they mention these two critical things of status, citizen of the United States and a non-citizen national. They don't tell you to attach anything, do they? No. Where do they tell you to attach it? Four pages away on the front of the application in the warning box. You can attach documentation, comma, including affidavits. You don't think they're trying to hide it now, do you? These are some sneaky bastards, man. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
The reason that's in there is because they had to put it in there to make the scheme constitutional. It's the one time the State Department's got to put this in front of the public, and they went to every conceivable length to hide it. Okay. And they did a damn good job. There's no telling how many people have filled out a passport application in the last 60, 70 years and never saw it. I saw it.
Right.
As I understood, we're dealing with the feudal system. The only reason I've been successful is because I had John W. Benson as a law teacher. He'd been researching this his entire life. He was a Renaissance man. He should have lived in that age. He lived in that age during his life. Okay. And that's the only reason, because I know it's the feudal system and there's not another patriot researcher out there that knows it. They think they're playing constitutional law. We're playing merchant law. And you're a serf. You have a property right upon you through this system. And every time they, yes, that's fraudulent. Okay. But every time they ever ask you, are you a citizen of the United States or are you a resident? You said yes and you signed something. So A, you gave them consent to their fraud. And B, you gave them consent to govern you. So all this bad stuff that's happening to people, that's getting their houses and their cars and everything else and their money taken and all that, you gave them the permission to do it. Take it away. Take yeah. it away. Because you can
yeah, absolutely.
Do Look. A damn thing about it except take the mask off and be open tyrants.
Exactly. Very good point. Let's get a comment and or question from Giuseppe. Giuseppe, go ahead, sir. Where is this taking your mind?
Well, I mean, it's honestly, it's not really relevant to me. I think that it's interesting, but I'm not going to change my life. I my wife has a job that's involving the federal government, and that's our paycheck. And
no
so I'm not in, you know, I think this is great. And I know a lot of people are into it, but you know, I think that the reason they haven't brought the hammer down is because there's so many, Republican types that are defunding the IRS. And if they had enough enforcement, they'd come after everyone who's doing this. So I think it's cool and it's interesting, but I don't see it as relevant to people who are existing in the United States. I mean, you're in Ecuador, you're in Argentina, And you're giving this, telling people what to do, but I'm not going to blow up my life because of what Roger Sales says.
I'm not telling anybody what to do, Giuseppe. I've never told anybody to do this ever. Okay. And your statement is wrong. It would not have any effect on you, and they're not going to come after it. You know why? Because they have to take the mask off and show they're open tyrants. And there's billions of us and a couple of thousand of them. We're who they're really scared of, and they know this very well. And the reason they're not going to come out and ding anybody is because then the people have got a chance to bring this up in open forums, and they don't want this brought up and this exposed anywhere. Okay, so those may be your thoughts, and I understand those, but I would tell you from my 30 years of experience here that you're incorrect.
Well, I mean, that's the beauty of adults having a conversation. So I respect your opinion. Okay. And, that's cool.
Let me put it this way. Okay. I've been helping people do this for 11 years. All right. I have no idea who's filed this paperwork. A lot of people bought the book, heard me on Joyce Riley, took the affidavit that's printed there and filed it exactly verbatim. Okay. I'll have them call into the show occasionally. Yeah, I got that. I got your book. I sent it in, got a passport. Da, 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 da. I don't know who's filed these things, but I'll tell you this. If anybody had a problem in any way, shape, or form, I think that I'd be one of the first people they'd find a way to get a hold of. Would you agree with that?
Yes, of course, if that's
the I've never had one of those phone calls in 11 years.
Well, and one thing I've learned from my research in this, guys, is that everybody kind of has to find their comfort level in this. And, you know, I've met, through Roger and other people, I've met quite a few people in real life now in the Los Angeles area. And, these people are really top quality individuals that are looking for solutions. And what I've found is people have their own comfort level about how far they want to go or if they even want to go in there. But learning the information is certainly important. And as I said before, I think it's the only kind of research you can do where you actually can do something to change your life rather than just reacting to what the government is doing to you.
Correct. Okay. So, we've got mutual friends, Daryl, about Daryl. I mean, Daryl's been stopped on the side of the road. He travels on his passport card. Cop stops him, comes back, says, have a nice day. We've got several people around the country just driving on passport cards. They get pulled over. Nothing ever happens. Nobody's IRS has not come down on anybody. Okay. So, no, there's not been one backlash, Giuseppe, to my knowledge, in 11 years. I've never gotten a report of it anyway.
What about Wesley Snipes always bet black. I mean, he did this and he ended up in
prison.
Well,
he was a citizen of the United States. He never came out of the system. They can do anything they want to you when they got a property right in you. Okay. Let's go back to the IRS code. You want to talk about Wesley Snipes. In those 50, in all the Code of Federal Regulations, there's 50 titles. Each one's attached to a title of the code, okay? And on the front page of every one of those is their jurisdictional statement, who all those regulations they can apply them to. This is all guided by the Administrative Procedures Act. You just saw one of their deals get turned over within the last 3 weeks on this issue right here, the masks on the planes. Do you know how they overturned that? They didn't do the regulation correctly. If you're going to promulgate a regulation that's got general applicability that applies to everybody, it's got to go through a separate due process called notice and comment in the Federal Register. The CDC ran this through without putting it through notice and comment. That's what that judge overturned it on. Huh. You say they don't do anything? They got to do things right. There's an example right there. Okay. Right there. All right. So on the first of the 49 of those 50 Code of Federal Regulations, the inside cover on the first page, their jurisdictional statement is residence. There's only one that's different. That's Title 26. By the way, Title 26 was never passed by the Senate. It was never signed by the President. It was passed by the House of Representatives and put straight into the United States Code. It's another example of that non-positive law stuff, okay? And the reason for that is because the House has exclusive jurisdiction over Washington, D.C., and you're all federal citizens because you got put into it fraudulently and you've agreed with it every time they've ever asked you, period. Okay. Now let's go to that one Code of Federal Regulations, and their jurisdictional statement is on the first page. It's 1.1-1 parentheses small a. All right. Let me get some agreement, Dave, from you and Giuseppe. There's only two statuses. You're either free or you're a slave. You agree with that?
I agree with that. Sure.
There's God's law. God's plan is freedom, and Satan's plan is slavery. You agree with that?
Completely. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Well, let's go to the Code of Federal Regulations, Title 26 CFR 1.1-1A, right at the front of the book. And their jurisdictional statement reads, an income tax is owed by all individuals who are citizens of the United States or residents. There's your slave status. And to the extent of 871B and 877B, those are those two constitutional taxes, all non-resident alien individuals. Huh? Well, tell me, what's Jose the tomato picker doing paying income tax? Okay, we already agreed there's only two statuses, right? You're either free or you're a slave. We know which ones the slaves are. Then this non-resident alien guy's got to be the free one, doesn't it? How do they use that? Oh, you mean like I'm non-resident to the residency of the 14th Amendment, and if I'm a state citizen, then my political status is alien from a federal citizen? You think that's the way they're using it, maybe? Yeah, that's the way they're using it. Okay. So you're talking about taxes. Once you file your affidavit with the Secretary of State, he is the head knocker, by the way, and is the lord of the manor, in essence, in charge of all things concerning citizenship. Then you're out of the system and you've switched. Now you start putting these other clowns on notice. A lot of people want to put the IRS on notice first. So you take that affidavit, Dave, that you filed with the Secretary of State, you send it to the IRS. You put a little cover letter on it that says, please find the enclosed citizenship evidence now on file with the Secretary of State of the United States. Please put this firmly and permanently in my administrative file. Please adjust your records, your actions, and your agent's actions accordingly. You're out. Unless you owe any 871 or 877B taxes, one of those you'll never owe because it's an expatriation. If you want to acquire this status as a free man, that there's only two groups of people in the entire history of our planet that have ever had it for 200 years apiece, why the hell would you give it up, and what would you give it up for? So I'm assuming nobody's ever going to owe that tax. The other tax is a tax on corporation bonds that are given their life by the federal government, like Union Pacific. And the case for that is Brushaber versus Union Pacific Railroad. And you can go back and look at that case. It was the first case on the 16th Amendment. Every time there's a tax case that's passed or decided on by the Supreme Court, there is a Treasury decision that's written by the Treasury interpreting the findings of the court so they can apply it to their tax collection practices. So if you go in and go to Treasury Decision 2313, you'll probably have to go to a federal depository to find it. Treasury decisions referred to as TD 2313. It was signed by Treasury Secretary of the Treasury, or not that time Treasurer, McAdoo. And the very first sentence on TD 2313 reads, Frank Brushaber, a citizen of the state of New York and a non-resident alien.
Right. And Roger, we're down to the final half hour of the show. And what I'd like to do is open up the lines for callers. And the number to call in is 703-873-7797. That's 703-873-7797. And Giuseppe, maybe you could put that on the board there too.
Sure.
And Giuseppe, how about another comment from you? You are coming at this from a different angle, and it's cool to hear an adult discussion with differing points of view.
Well, Roger, here's the way I see it. I'm a very pragmatic person. Oh, we got a call here. Let me add the call, and then I'll continue on. And as such, I think of two dear friends, brothers. Listen, if you don't call her, if you don't mute immediately, I'm dropping you. Well, I'm tired of you callers. Lazy, don't put on a headset and earphones. And And if we get any feedback, you're gone.
Yeah, just mute. If you're not talking, mute. That's the way to handle it. Go ahead. Go ahead, Giuseppe.
So my question, I'm a pragmatic person, a survivor, a realist. And I think of two people, the great Frederick C. Blackburn, Blackbird 9, who had it all going. He was making six figures. He was married. He was going to run for public office. And then he exposed the lies of 9/11 and the synagogue of Satan powers that be destroyed his life. He had to live in his car for 2 months, and he's now slowly rebuilt his life, and he's trying to expose the truth, but they destroyed his life. Jim Fetzer, a man who has got decades of research. He was sued by a lying Jew, Lenny Reuben Fabner, aka Lenny Posner, and he went to the courts. Should have been a slam dunk in Jim's favor, and now he's got a $1.4 million judgment, which is just bogus and lies. And he's trying to go to the Supreme Court to get justice. He won't get justice. And you can't trust the judicial system. So to me, the only reason that you and others who are employing this strategy are left alone is because you don't matter. You're not threatening the system in any way. And if you were to, you're going to be going from Argentina to a federal prison somewhere. I mean, trust me.
I'm not in Argentina. They're not going to put me in a federal prison. And I would tell you straightforward, you're just wrong. Those two guys were both in a capacity of being property with the federal government. They can do anything they want to them. And until you go through this process with this one specific guy, they're going to always have that on you. And they're going to always have the upper hand. It's when you go through this, they don't have the upper hand anymore, and they won't do that to you, because now you can bring this information out and expose them, and they're never going to have it exposed. Okay, I promise.
Okay, well,
one time, Giuseppe, this affidavit has gotten into a courtroom, and it was through one of my students whose ex-wife thought he was a sovereign citizen, and her parents, they were in a child custody battle over whether the kid was going to get vaccinated or not. And they put all this stuff in a courtroom on a hearing to try and update that agreement. And so because the moving party put it into the paperwork, once he got on the stand, he could reach over and grab the affidavit to start reading it. He starts reading it in the courtroom, and the judge says, "Don't read that document in this courtroom."
All right. Well, listen, Roger and Dave, we've got our first caller, area code 818. Why don't you tell us your name, where you're calling from, and what do you have for Roger and Scorpio? No, it's not muted. So maybe try and call back 818. I don't know. We're not here.
Hello?
There she is.
There we go.
Okay, great, great. Go ahead, 818. Well, we heard the hello.
Yeah, we heard the hello.
Maybe she was trying to say hollow to more. here we go. I know this guy, the man, the myth, the legend, Paul from California. Paul, are you there?
You're asking for 818. So
no, she we couldn't hear her. Go ahead.
Oh, sorry, let me turn my radio down. Sorry about that. Yes, great show. In fact, I've heard Roger multiple times on RBN. This is the kind of thing where I think Roger will agree that this subject can be so deep and so wide-ranging that you can see multiple 4-hour shows or 3-hour shows. Mm-hmm. And it helps to have some familiarity with it. The problem that I think you point out, Giuseppe, without really pointing it out, is the fact that there's just a fear among people there that's operating all the time. Part of the programming, and there's so many different types of programming we're subjected to, there's a programming of fear of this perceived authority and power that these people have. Now, you may have heard me mention before, and I've just said it casually multiple times, probably on Jim Fetzer's show as well, that I haven't filed a tax return for the entirety of my life since about age 19 or 20. And there's multiple other ways that you can look at it and attack it. I mean, if somebody just was to go to the IRS code and start looking up definitions, you talk about a masterpiece of deception, as a mentor of mine mentioned years ago. Just the definition of words are there. It's amazing what they do to you there. Yep. And there's all kinds of people. I'm sure Roger's familiar with George Gordon and probably. Did you ever have any conversations with Erwin Schiff, Roger?
I never did, but I was, of course, very familiar with him. And poor Erwin, another one of these horror stories, died chained up to a bed in the prison, and he died.
Right. The thing about people like Erwin Schiff, a brilliant guy, but he didn't, he wouldn't listen. Similar to Jim Fetzer. I love Jim Fetzer. I have high respect for him, but in many ways, he just does not listen. And it's, this is an issue. So, you know, I could go on like this. If you have any other callers, you can take it. But I just
we do have another caller. Go ahead, finish up.
I just wanted to thank you, Roger, for your dogged research and your persistence in trying to make this information known, because it really should be known.
Well, you know, I've known from the early on how important it is. See, and some people it goes over their head, some people it resonates with. I never know. I've never told anybody to do this ever. Okay, nor will I. And the reason is because it's got to be voluntary. See, this is what we don't understand that our enemies understand perfectly. Everything's got to be voluntary. You can go back to the Law of Nations in Vattel. It's echoed in the United Nations Charter. Every man has the right of personal political self-determination. It's your right and your decision under which laws you want to live under, not theirs. If they tell you what you are, it's tyranny. That's why they've gone to all this trouble, Giuseppe, to turn this thing around where they can ask you those two questions and get your agreement to you agreeing, not knowing what you're agreeing to, because now it's voluntary and now they can pull it off. Okay.
And by
that's
the way,
why they recognize it.
Real quick before you go to the next caller, Roger, I don't know if you're aware, but a guy by the name of Mark Stevens, Adventures in Legal Land, let everybody that he knew on his little circuit of talks and appearances and so forth, that there's been a court case, at least one, that they let the government off. There is no duty to protect. They don't have any duty at all to come and help you if you call the police, and the courts
have
ruled that.
So their
little BS contract of Allegiance for Protection is completely bogus anyway. So we're basically left with nothing. That's the way that they like it.
Yeah. And if any of you are skeptical out there like Giuseppe, go get a book called Fruit from the Poisonous Tree by a guy named Mel Stamper, who was not only attorney, he was a federal judge. And he did the same thing and got out of it too.
Well, we've got another caller, area code 818. Please tell us your name and where you come from and what do you got today? 818, are you there? Hello.
818's got bad trouble in 818.
Appears to be so. Yep.
Okay. We heard a hello earlier, but that was it. I don't know what happened.
I don't know what's going on.
While y'all are getting another one up, let me just tell you, we've recently got all this information
hello,
up on the
I
website.
Oh,
there. Wait, here we go.
There she is. We can hear you. Can you hear us? Hello? Hello?
Can you hear us? We heard you there for a second.
We heard you.
Hello.
Hello. Hello. We can hear you.
Well, I can't hear you guys at all.
Well, you ask your question. Are you listening on the radio? Just ask your question. We'll answer it.
Hello. You heard me, but I can't hear you.
Yeah, go ahead and ask your question at least. Go ahead.
Hello.
Somebody's got a radio on the
background. Yeah, she needs to go to earbuds and a headset would solve it all. But go ahead and just speak your question and then.
You heard me, but I can't.
So.
Okay, well, let me try to ask the question since hopefully you guys will hear me. Roger, this question is to you. So once the paperwork is filed, the affidavit is sent to the Secretary of State, does this void old contracts and will everything dissolve once that's done?
Well, not necessarily. You know, I mean, in other words, one of the questions that's always asked to me, does it affect Social Security? When I opened my Social Security account, I was in Argentina. I gave them my affidavit. I've been getting checks for 11 years, never been an interruption except when they got an address wrong. Okay. So to my knowledge, again, in 11 years, I've never had anybody contact me with any kind of backlash on benefits, payments, anything else. Okay. So I don't want to automatically void my Social Security contract. I want that money every month. It's my money. Okay. So you can go back, and what we do and teach people to do, and I didn't get your name, is we go back and put people on notice. In other words, we're using what's called due process, which is the basis of every body of law in the world. And we're going back after we've got our status straight, and we're going to put these other people, the people in your state, whatever agencies of the federal government you want to put on notice, that this has been filed with the Secretary of State and they don't have any more jurisdiction on us anymore, unless it's a common law type crime. Okay. Unless there's a person harmed. All right. So basically, you don't have to go back and do all of that. And that's where I disagree with some of the other researchers. You've already shown it's fraud by filing your affidavit with the Secretary of State. They recognize it. Oh, and let me tell you something else, by the way. We have people do two filings, one without a passport application first, and then follow it up and attach your affidavit to a passport. They take passport fraud real seriously. Okay. There's never been, again, one blowback that's ever been reported to me in 11 years from anybody doing this.
Oh, that's great. Let me give out the phone number one more time to call in. That's 703-873-7797. 703-873-7797. So we're taking calls. You're welcome to call in.
We have another caller, Scorpio. All right. Area code 608, the great Murr Bailey, I believe, is calling.
Oh, there's Murr. Okay. Before Murr comes on, I want to give this information out. And that is, we just recently got all this up on the web. And it's just like Paul said, you can sit here and we could talk on this issue for 6 to 8 hours here today. Okay. I promise you we could. It's that in depth. It's that complex. All right. But we don't have the time to do that. We've got a number of interviews that I've done and a lot of other supporting information. It's up on a website called The Matrix Docs, plural, thematrixdocs.com. Thematrixdocs.com. I've got a radio show on 5 days a week. On Eurofocus, sister network to this, the we're on here today, from 11 to 1 Eastern time. And then I am ahead of you guys now, a couple of hours on RBN on Sunday night, because I took Ralph Winterroot's slot, the late Ralph Winterroot.
Oh, that's great. That's awesome. Sunday nights turn out to be a good night for RBN. I mean, the king of Sunday night, Robert Ravel, Incendiary, and we're right ahead of him with the Sane Asylum RBN edition. So fantastic. That's a good show. Good night for listeners. Murr, are you there? Hello, Murr.
Hey, Murr.
Yeah, I'm here. Hi.
Hey, Murr. Hey.
You said everything I was about to say. Sarah Westall was the most recent kind of big name one that Roger did, but we also meet on this Jitsi board during Roger's Monday through Friday shows on Eurofolk, and it's like an open forum, and it's really great. No matter how much you hear this, you can hear it some more, and different new people come in, and you hear it from their angle, and, you know, it's really good to share the information that way. And, you know, as much as I've heard it, I still haven't done it yet, and I can see why people would, you know, if they think they have family entanglements that would mess up maybe someone in their family, you keep thinking about it. So, but it is definitely a good thing to do. And this Mark Stevens, his real name was something Rizzo, and his thing was to go to court and get out, or go to jail and get out. I don't want to go there.
You don't want to go to either one of those places.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, again, go to the Code of Federal Regulations. Go do this yourself. There's 50 titles. Go and look at the front page of every one of them and see who they can enforce those on. They tell you right there. They can't take the regulations and go grab a Canadian citizen or a Mexican national and enforce regulations on them. Okay? And they don't. But they can enforce them on residents and citizens of the United States. If you're a national, you're in the same status as a citizen of Canada or a national out of Mexico. They can't mess with you either. Nor will they. But if they do, and it does get to that point where this isn't recognized anymore, well, I guess we all know what time it is then, don't we?
Yeah, you know, there's an awful lot of them, I think, that must be using this, right?
Oh, I guarantee you, that's why they've got that in there in the tax code. How do you think, you know, Tiny Tim TurboTax Geithner, you know, when they were putting him through the Senate confirmation to be Secretary of the Treasury, they said, why haven't you filed your tax returns in 5 years? Oh, my TurboTax messed up. Sure, Timmy.
Yeah, well, we all know that since 33, the bankruptcy, and then Travikant talking about it and telling us that the used to be a treasurer, and then since that 33 bankruptcy, it's the Secretary of the Treasury, yeah. And they handle the funds, Monetary Funds.
If you go into Title 28, it'll tell you right there, the Secretary of the Treasury is the governor of the fund. They also control the Department of Justice through a treaty. That's why the Department of Justice and the FBI is so screwy. Both of those entities, Treasury and DOJ, are controlled by the International Monetary Fund in this hypothecated bankruptcy.
Right. It's government name only. There is no government. We're enemies of the state. So
anyway, by the way, if you go down, if you still got that page open, that policy document open, Dave?
That bottom line.
Yes, I do.
Yeah. Chat. Oh, did you? Okay. Well, okay. If for the audience, there's some really important stuff on that page. I mean, it's one of the most important research documents I've ever found the whole time I've been doing this, really. But there at the bottom, there's a paragraph. And at the end of that paragraph, I say the paragraph is fluff because they go, well, if you're 18 and in Northern Mariana Islands and up to 6 months before your birthday and after your birthday, you can go in front of a judge and utter this statement. Okay. And it says, I blank do solemnly swear my intent.
I declare my intention
to be a national and not a citizen of the United States.
I'll read it word for word here. Briefly, the last
from the state.
Roger, hold on. Roger, go ahead, Scorpio.
Yeah, I'm just going to read that statement verbatim from the actual website, the government website, so it's not a conspiracy theory. Okay, anyone over 18 years, whichever date is later, can become a national but not a citizen of the United States by making a declaration under oath before any court established by the Constitution or laws of the United States or in any other court of record in the Commonwealth in the form as follows, quote, I, your name, being duly sworn, hereby declare my intention to be a national but not a citizen of the United States.
Right there from the State Department in their own words, folks.
You know, they worked that out really well to come up with that, to get that precise statement. So it's probably good to keep that sentence really clear and then whatever else you want to add after or on the cover letter. But in your affidavit, that's probably really good to stick to that statement.
I dress it up a little bit. There's a sample affidavit on the matrixdocs.com page. We got some other documents up there and a couple of interviews, a couple of the real, what I consider the better interviews I've done, one with Tom D from RBN and the other with Deanna Spingola from RBN. There's a couple of other ones up there, but those two were particularly good and they covered all the basics in a good, understandable, methodic way. And if you want to go back and hear this, not as disjointed, we've been a little disjointed here today, but if you want to go back and get a really clean presentation, either one of those two are really good, I think. So on thematrixdocs.com, go over there and educate yourself to your heart's content.
Well, come on now, Roger. This has been a pretty good one too. Don't sure. discount us too deeply. I think 818 has tried to call in again. Giuseppe, can we try to get that caller?
I think she's there. 818, yes. Are you there?
Yes.
I'm okay, here. Go ahead, please.
I can hear you guys.
I
couldn't hear you guys whatsoever. So I called like six times. It was weird. But Roger, I have another question. Earlier, you said that you get everybody on notice.
Yes.
Once you file your affidavit to the Secretary of State.
Correct.
Now, I mean, wouldn't you put yourself on kind of like the radar if you do this to the IRS? I mean, isn't it best to just like leave well enough alone once
If you leave well enough alone, you don't change their records and you're in a status where they can come screw with you. This, they can't come screw with you, nor will they.
Who are you saying to put on notice? Is there like a line of agencies?
Okay, well, there's over 500 agencies in Washington D.C. now, so it depends on you. Okay, IRS is the one that generally most people want to put on if you got a farm out there in 818 and you were going to do a pond for your livestock and the EPA came out and said you can't build that pond here, it's against those regulations. Well, you want to file this, take yourself out of their jurisdiction and write them a notice with a short cover letter and a copy of that affidavit, and send it to the national director, the regional director, the district director, and also probably the agent that's dinging you. Okay. But that's one example. The other one is from the federal agencies to the state, because now you're going to go and put the people in the state and your local folks on notice. And the way you do that is you find out, you're going to have to do a little legwork here. Whoever is the attorney general in your state, he's the head guy. And you're going to send him a copy of the affidavit with a cover letter saying, please find the enclosed citizenship evidence. By the way, Giuseppe, that's what they call it internally at the State Department, citizenship evidence. I'm pretty sure the legal department knows the definition of the word evidence. Okay.
Right.
Please find the enclosed citizenship evidence now on file with the Secretary of State of the United States of America. Please place this firmly and permanently in my administrative file. Please adjust your actions, your records, and your agent's actions accordingly. Now, you'll send that to the Attorney General of whatever state you're in, and you're going to go back and copy your local district attorney, your local chief of police, your local sheriff, if you've got one, and the one we've added lately is your local public health official, because that's the person they're going to weaponize and deputize if they're going to ever go out and do these mandated vaccines. So you want to put all those people on notice that they no longer have any jurisdiction on you. Now, here's what happens. They've got a very set areas that they can work in. They've called delegated responsibilities. This comes from the Administrative Procedures Act, which is the Bible and the rules that cover all agencies. And it's what they can do and what they can't do. And if they step outside of their delegated responsibilities, they now lose their cloak of immunity and they become personally liable. And you can go get everything they got.
Okay, perfect. And so none of this, so it's fine to just send a copy of the affidavit and it doesn't
yes.
need to be original
nope,
notarized,
nope.
right?
No, you don't even have to send the original. You don't even have to send the original one to the Secretary of State.
Really?
Just send, no, you can send a copy. Just send a copy. You don't
keep
need anything.
The original it doesn't, for yourself.
It doesn't have to even be an affidavit. It can be just a declaration. You could just use that sentence we read a minute ago, sign it and send it to them, and they got to accept it because this is your choice, not theirs. If they tell you
right,
what you
right.
are, it's tyranny.
Right.
And they'll
and
never be open
to same goes with the passport application. It could be a copy.
Yes.
Okay, great.
Now, when you do the passport,
better, right?
You,
right, Roger?
Yeah, it really better. Does, because now you can carry your passport card as your identification. It's the highest form of government ID. Now that is linked to your affidavit, which was included when you pursued and paid for your passport. All you have to do is get the card. It's only $30. You don't have to get a book unless you're traveling internationally, so you can get visa stamps.
Yeah, Daryl actually, what
okay,
he has thought was using
hold
the book.
Let's see. What did you have more questions, 818?
I think that was, well, actually, I do have one question for you. What are your views on the UCC-1-308 code in
well,
signing? You're like checks and stuff
you could,
like that.
You could do that. I mean, it's more if you're trying to reserve your rights as a slave when you can't reserve them because you got somebody with a property right in you. But, you know, I don't use that stuff. I just what you need to know is the word national. But you got to know the information because that's your ability to be free is your ability to defend your position.
Right. Well, Roger, one last question. So with renewing your passport, like I have a passport that expires in September. Do I
yep.
fill out a form that is the old one? Or
no, you want to no, you'll okay. do a renewal. You qualify for a renewal, which means you don't have to include a birth certificate and you can mail it. You don't have to sign it in front of an administrating official and all the things they make you do with a DS-11. You can just go ahead and put your package in. They're going to ask you to send your passport in. If it's still active, they'll turn around and send it back to you immediately in case you're going to travel with it. And then they'll send you the passport card or whatever else you've ordered as it gets processed. So you can have two, because your old passport is issued to you and another legal personality as a serf. Now you're applying and you're including your affidavit, and this one's going to be issued to you as a national or a free person. So you'll have both of them, okay?
Okay, great. Thank you, Roger.
Well, you're very welcome. What was your name?
Amanda.
Amanda, nice to speak with you, Amanda. Come join us on our daily show. We had 61 people on the Jitsi board the other day on Friday or Thursday, whatever it was. A new record for our little get-together.
Oh, that's great. Do we have a link or something that...
Well, go to that site. Go to that site. And if the guy that set it up might not have gotten this information up there. Amanda, here's what you do. Send me an email. I'm going to give you my email address, okay? Radio Ranch, that's two words with no space. Radio Ranch at mail, mail.com. Radio Ranch, no space, at mail.com. And just put in the subject line Jitsi information, and I'll send you back out a hookup with us, okay?
Okay, great. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. We got a nice group on there, MERS on there virtually every day. We tried to get Dave on a year or so ago, and he couldn't get on with us.
Yeah, hopefully now that I'm in the States, I'll be able to get on there, and or I can use my phone if I have to. So, yeah, I'll be joining in there and listening. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, we got some very sharp people on there, some people that have been around this for a long time, and we have questions. It's really for the newer folks these days. If we got a question that I can't answer, there's a few occasionally. We have these group discussions where these other people can come in. This is how this whole notice thing got pioneered right there, because we were having people send it to the Secretary of State of the state, and the Secretary of State of the state is just interested in incorporating business.